The death toll in that rampage by a U.S. soldier in Afghanistan more than a week ago is up to 17 from 16 now. And U.S. Staff Sergeant Robert Bales will be charged with all of those deaths in a case that could bring the death penalty. Bales will appear in a military court at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas later today, and the people of Afghanistan will be watching closely. Joining us now from Kabul is David Loin, correspondent for our partner at the BBC. How closely are people paying attention to this case and the U.S. disposition of it, David?
Well, there's been two responses, John, to the fact that charges have now been placed against Staff Sergeant Robert Bales. The Taliban, in a statement to a Western news agency, the Reuters news agency, their spokesman said that they thought that these raids were planned all along by the US military. They didn't see this as one rogue individual. They don't believe there'll be any kind of fair trial, and they've promised more revenge attacks. I guess that's a predictable reaction from the insurgents. Far more interesting reaction, in a way, from the rest of Afghanistan. There's a real groundswell of feeling here that this incident should have been put forward in an Afghan court, that Robert Bales should have faced Afghan justice and not US justice. Now, of course, that was never going to happen. He was serving with the US forces. But that feeling has been fueled again today by relatives of those who were killed, who in response to these charges have said this won't be a fair trial. We want to see him facing trial here in Afghanistan.
How could that conceivably work? Is there anything that the U.S. could do that would be a gesture to that strong sentiment? And what is the sense of mistrust of what are typically fairly aggressive prosecutions on the part of U.S. judge advocates when they deal with cases of atrocities like this in Iraq and in Afghanistan?
Yes, I mean, all of the evidence in the past has been put forward, as you say, very robustly, and Staff Sergeant Robert Bales will be, you and I understand that, treated under a justice system which works. In a country like Afghanistan that's seen things that in the past there have been a number of civilians killed by US soldiers who've not faced justice, so they see this in a sense as a continuum from those events. The reaction to this death was not as big in Afghanistan in a way as it was internationally, and the reason for that was, I'm afraid to say, that relations between a lot of people in Afghanistan and the US forces are so low that they thought that almost anything could happen. There's also been some of this fueled by President Karzai, because he's been saying very loudly that his investigators have been blocked from having a look at what happened in the villages. They haven't been given the evidence that US investigators were given. And I think that's one area which the US might have been more careful in. If they'd gone overboard in sharing the investigation with the Afghans and showing how they were collecting forensic evidence and all these kinds of things, then I think that they might have done something to assuage this feeling in the country that this is just, I'm afraid to say, sort of business as usual. This is how American forces operate. This is how some people in this country think that they operate. And it certainly made things, relations were pretty bad between President Karzai and the U.S. administration already. It's made them far worse.
You know, the takeaway here is possibly, as you suggest, that the Afghan people broadly have given up on the notion of U.S. justice in a way that they understand it. But it also seems that they've given up on paying much attention to the Taliban, trying to take propaganda advantage from this as well. Do you see that?
When you go into Afghan villages, they're fed up to the back teeth of the war, including quite a lot of younger people who just don't want this war to continue, and they have as little interest in the Taliban taking power again as any warlords taking power, as US or British forces still rampaging, in their view, around their streets. They want security, law and order, education, and behind all this, when you look, dig into the opinion polls, a lot of Afghans don't want US forces to pull out immediately. They believe that there would be chaos if they did. But they want them to withdraw, and they want them to behave in a different way. And I think we'll see over the next few months increasing pressure on the United States to, for example, give advance notice through Afghan judges before there are night raids. I mean, not obviously to the individuals concerned, but through the Afghan justice system. That's something that the Afghans are insisting on. They've already taken control of the prison system, the whole of the prison system. That was another key demand. And I think we'll see in the next few months, increasing pressure from Afghanistan to take control of its own destiny.
Let's shift gears for just a moment as you raise the security question. You know, in the fallout from this situation in Toulouse, France, this individual who was apparently in the custody of individuals in Afghanistan at some point, the investigation continues, the facts aren't completely clear. But what is the state of international monitoring of individuals who might be suspicious in the broader war on terror inside Afghanistan? Does the U.S. and NATO have a specific set of protocols that they share that sort of information and follow the travels of individuals who might leave a place like Kandahar?
Well, not in the sense that you would want to see it. It was extraordinary that it now turns out that the French were following Mohamed Merah. They knew that he had background in Afghanistan and Pakistan, and yet he was able to carry out these attacks that he did, killing seven people in southern France. But there aren't there isn't the trust really between the Afghan authorities and the U.S. authorities in terms of sharing intelligence all the way down the line on individuals. The Afghans have a certain amount of information, the Americans have a certain amount of information, but the American experience in sharing information, certainly in Pakistan and the Northwest frontier in the past, has been very bad. When they've given advance notice in Pakistan of attacks, people have tended to flee because they've been tipped off. And there's very much the same sense of distance in Afghanistan between U.S. forces and Afghan intelligence in terms of following individuals. I think that the real problem for the international community, John, is that there are now hundreds, thousands of men who have, over the last 10, 15 years, fought one way or another with jihadists in these countries, in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and in Kashmir, many of whom have passports or have ability to travel abroad, have a dual nationality, like this man, Mohamed Merah, who was an Algerian brought up in France. Many of them who travel to countries, United States, Britain, France, Canada in particular, and it's very hard to track every single one of them.
Indeed, you're describing a jihadist nation that has essentially grown up in this generation since the September 11th attacks, a jihadist nation of individuals who aren't associated with one particular state or one particular place in the world and are almost impossible to monitor. That's really one of the huge consequences that we're dealing with here. David Loyne, correspondent for our partner, the BBC, reporting from Kabul. Thanks, David.
Thanks, John. See you then.